you know, I am really inspired to spread as much of this information as possible to get more of us in here.
Totally. Look, you know, honestly, just a quick background. We don't have to get started just yet, but I moved to New York in 2017 and I graduated in 2016. And when I moved to New York, I used to go to a lot of networking events and I would meet, you know, a lot of us at different events. And I would hear people that were like nurses and sometimes residents and people that work in marketing and accounting. And they would always be like, yeah, and I'm like one of the only ones in my office. And I was just like, all right, so what industry is it that we're all there where no one feels like they're the only one? And truthfully, that probably doesn't exist. And I'm sure that we can always feel like we need more of us everywhere. So I wanted to do my part in PR and marketing and communications by trying to create something that would help people to be more attracted to the profession. Because I think a lot of the barrier to entry is really just knowledge about it and being aware of what it is and how it works. You know, if you don't see anybody that looks like you, that you know does it on a high level, you might not even think that there is anybody or even know what to aspire to or look up to. So. What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Optics Podcast on Markham Weekly, the first online magazine dedicated to advancing diversity and inclusion in marketing, advertising, PR, and media. The Optics Podcast is a platform dedicated to highlighting successful people of color in industries where we are underrepresented, those who have broken glass ceilings, shattered expectations of those before them, and continue to make history as the first. On this show, each guest will share stories from their upbringing, experiences in the workplace, and words of wisdom for the next generation of young professionals to better navigate their careers. This week's second guest is Dee Dee Brown, Senior Vice President of Multicultural Marketing and Publicity at Paramount Pictures. I was super excited to talk to Dee Dee because, you know, marketing and publicity for movie studios in Hollywood seems like such a cool job. So I was really interested in what type of experience she had on her way to earning that role. And it turns out you don't really need a traditional background in PR to get there. Dee Dee describes her journey as serendipitous, but truthfully, I think she set herself up for success every step of the way. So without further ado, here's Dee Dee. All right, Dee Dee, hi, how are you?
Dang, we're here. Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. It's great to meet you. We haven't met, obviously, but it's nice to meet you over Zoom. I'm happy to have you on. So let's get started and let's take it to where you are now. So you're currently the SVP of publicity at Paramount Pictures. Tell me, what do you do on a day-to-day basis? What does your job consist of? What does that look like? Just big picture.
Big picture. Well, I'm the SVP of National Publicity now. I'm transitioning into a new role as the SVP of Multicultural Marketing and Publicity.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you. And that is basically where I sort of came from over the past few years, was the multicultural marketing and publicity space. But my day to day is always filled with lots of surprises, as I think anyone would guess in publicity and entertainment in general. Mm-hmm. But specifically, the team, the national publicity team, is expected to on a movie title handle filmmaker relationships, talent relationships, just the PR strategy overall for the title. And that encompasses so many things, from the first look images that the target audience or the world sees, as well as the trailer debuts, what's going in. So it's all the earned media on a movie campaign, along with the filmmaker and talent communications and relationships.
Okay.
In a nutshell.
Okay. So, well, award season just ended. Did you work on any films that we might have heard of in the past year or so? This pandemic year, I should say.
Well, yes and no. Because of the pandemic, I actually was supposed to start my job in LA or move to LA from New York last like April, May. And then the pandemic happened. It never happened. And so I never technically opened a movie. I was slated to open 8 movies that all either moved or went to streaming. But I did get to work on Coming to America, which went to Amazon. I also got to work on The United States versus Billie Holiday, which went to Hulu. And I'm glad that audiences got to see those movies when they did, just not knowing the state of the world. I'm currently working on, well, a number of movies, but on the national publicity side, Paw Patrol, the movie, which if anyone has young kids, Paw Patrol is a big deal. I do not have kids, so it's definitely a little bit of a learning curve for me. So I'm working on Paw Patrol, the movie, as well as Clifford on the national publicity side. And then for multicultural marketing and publicity, I now sort of have a lens and opportunity to work on Snake Eyes, which is part of the G.I. Joe mythology. I'm also working on A Quiet Place. Those two movies, and then a slate of other movies coming up. But those are the more sort of current ones.
Nice. Yeah, and I'm sure you can't announce everything that you're working on, but that is a pretty good inside look into what you have been working on. That's pretty cool. I know Coming to America had a huge influencer marketing push. Were you a part of that, or was that partially Amazon?
Well, I think it honestly was both. I mean, there's some things I can say and can't say, but it was a collective, effort to, we got it to a certain point. And then when it went to Amazon, there were things that were in the works that sort of transitioned over. And then they took over a lot of things that, hadn't been solidified. So it definitely was a labor of love. I'm a big fan of Coming to America. Ugh. I'm a big fan of the talent of Ruth Carter and her amazing costumes. And it really was an honor this past year, even though I technically didn't get to open a movie, but it was just such an honor to get to learn my job with a little bit more grace and respect. And I'm lucky to be surrounded by some amazingly generous and talented people who definitely just made my very odd transition into the job during a pandemic really special.
Yeah, that's super important. I know, a lot of the experience of where you work is attributed to who you work with, and I'm glad that you got to at least have that during a pandemic. So speaking of where you work and the people that you work with, how long have you been at Paramount? And what was your journey to getting to SVP?
I started last March.
Oh, really? Okay. So how did you get to Paramount then? That might be a better question.
Well, that's a long, long story. But I will say it's been, my career in general has been serendipitous, especially in the PR and marketing space in general, because it's not something I ever really knew about growing up. And I think a lot of Black and brown folks will say that. My parents are, normal parents. My stepfather was in the military, and my mom was a nurse, and they're, wonderful, like normal people, but they didn't know from communications or entertainment or anything like that. So,
right.
Being able to, and I always had a love for entertainment and wanting to entertain, and I loved movies growing up. That was some of our family traditions, one of our family traditions, to go see movies as much as, we could. There weren't a lot of us in movies or on television. So that journey in and of itself, you learn to appreciate a lot of different content. But wow, what an opportunity to see, what content and entertainment to at this point. But it was a very serendipitous journey into this amazing world of entertainment and film. And I actually started my career a little bit later than everyone else. And it was probably started around 26 and stumbled across it as I was basically waiting tables at a company called Planet Hollywood, which was all about, it was sort of the window for field markets or smaller markets into the celebrity and entertainment world. Because celebrities, I started in Atlanta, so celebrities would come to Planet Hollywood in Atlanta, do memorabilia presentations. We would promote their movies. We'd work with the city to do community relations initiatives. We would work with athletes, and it was just one of those things where you never really got to see celebrities, obviously, the way we do now because we have social media. Mm-hmm. But I started as an assistant there. I was waiting tables and, you know, knew I needed to be doing something else as a college graduate out of school for 2 years. And, you know, just started talking to people. And I started as an assistant, like most of us do, to the PR manager and the general manager. And the PR manager, who is a dear friend of mine, now just mentored me and took me under her wing. And so I learned from there, having to manage many different activations and initiatives, and learning how to pitch and what all that meant, and how to be around celebrities and not be starstruck and but get your job done. It was a wonderful entry into this world. And then I went on to have sort of a variety of wonderful opportunities that I never set out to have. But I did regional marketing as well at In Demand, which was the pay-per-view network. So I got a window into what it would be like, sort of now, I guess you would call it the streaming or home entertainment, where I launched like NBA League Pass, and we worked on movies on demand, and I'm obviously dating myself. and that led to me deciding I wanted to move to New York because I wanted new opportunities. And I moved to New York, I quit my job and got a job as a promotions manager temporarily at the New York Post, where I worked on copy and sweepstakes and other initiatives in the, in the media space that taught me a host of things about working with, you know, challenging editors and also thinking through how you communicate with internal stakeholders and across the company, and mm-hmm. learning how to connect all the dots on that. And that was a wonderful opportunity that I had for like 3 years. And then I positioned myself for a director of special events because we just needed a special events person because we were doing more and more of that. We also needed publicity, and I had a background in PR. Mm-hmm. And that went, you know, that was a very serendipitous opportunity. And around 2013, I was actually laid off from the job because they were doing some restructuring, and I was freelance for 7 years.
Nice. Okay.
Freelance, yeah.
Did you work in anything cool during freelance years, or was it just odd jobs here and there?
Well, let me tell you, I have to say, again, my life in general has been sort of very serendipitous, and I've been enormously blessed in so many ways, but certainly around opportunity that I didn't know existed. Mm-hmm. Right. So I did get to work on some really fun projects, and that's how I ended up sort of stumbling into, and I'm using stumbling very loosely, into this multicultural marketing and publicity world. I always thought about how we talk to Black and brown audiences and why we were always so underserved in everything that I did. So by default, I was always into that. Mm-hmm. So all of the jobs or projects that I took on, I always thought, oh, what's the slant here from a multicultural, specifically African American or Black perspective? I got to work, oh my gosh, I worked across every, you know, industry I could, because I need to pay the bills. So I worked on like NBA events with agents. I did some fashion shows. I worked, I did a lot of things between events, marketing, PR, publicity, like literally anything anybody would pay me for. I was like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I learned so much being able to do that, but it also, you know, sort of comes at a cost, because learning something new every time takes time, and it takes time away from, you know, your sort of billing how you build by the hour or by the project. Like all of that was very much a learning experience. So it was wonderful. And I started freelancing in the, again, the multicultural space on the movie Get On Up, the James Brown movie. And that was one of the...
Love that movie.
That was one of the entry points into the world that I'm in now. And that was 2014.
Nice. Nice. Okay. So you talk a lot about, you know, your experiences being really serendipitous and you kind of stumbled into this career, but what was it that you wanted to do coming out of college? Because you were working at Planet Hollywood for a while, probably running into a lot of celebrities, getting an inside look into this life and what it looks like and how to work these odd jobs that you ended up doing during freelancing. But what was it that you came out of college wanting to do that you kind of took a left turn from?
Well, my major was broadcasting. And I really thought, oh, I want to be a broadcaster. But there wasn't entertainment broadcasting the way we know it now. And so I just realized coming out of school, wait a minute, I never really, there was not this emphasis, at least in my world, on internships. And, you know, again, coming from just a family that wasn't a thing and me figuring it out, you know, maybe I didn't ask the right questions or surround myself with the right people, all the things that you don't see it so often, you don't know to ask it. I thought I was going to go into broadcasting, but then I realized I don't want to go to Mississippi and report on the cat in the tree or the tornado. And I was like, that's just not for me. And so that's why I was a little, like, quite transparently, I was a little lost after college. I was like, what am I doing? I mean, speaking about, you know, just thinking about being a late bloomer, but also I left college and moved home for a bit. And my dad was like, you got to go. You got to figure this out. And so I left home, which was Montgomery, Alabama, and moved to Atlanta. And I got a job basically at the finish line, which was like a Foot Locker. I was basically an assistant manager selling shoes, like making $16,000 a year, which I paid an agency to get me that job and I could have gotten it for free. So just like these life lessons are hilarious, but that's what I thought that's what I was going to do, and then took a pivot, which is not uncommon, honestly, Dane, in folks who are in the broadcasting or journalism world to at some point pivot to PR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely heard that. I've definitely heard that story before. Okay, I want to hear about growing up in Montgomery. So you talk a lot about how your parents, you know, they didn't know. I wouldn't say that they didn't know better, but they just weren't aware of what you might have needed in terms of like how to get to where you wanted to get to. So what was that experience like growing up in Montgomery? I'm picturing small town, country, because it's Alabama. What was that like?
It was all of those things. I mean, I moved when I was in eighth grade to South Florida. My stepfather was in the military. So we moved to Homestead Air Force Base, and that was, you know, it was shocking at the time because that's all I had known up until 18. And we had a very big family. We had Sunday dinners at our house and all of my cousins would come. My mom was one of eight kids. So, we had tons of cousins and just had those close relationships growing up. And I was popular in high school because I was a cheerleader. I was outgoing, like all the things. And so, interestingly enough, though, in Montgomery, I was always kind of multicultural anyway. Like my best friend was a Filipino girl named Joanna. I always had white friends, black friends, whatever, you know, and that's true to my life now. So it was a very, like, we went to church on Sundays and I liked to get dressed up and, you know, all the things that you would imagine, but I think somewhere in the back of my head, I was always thinking bigger, right? And then we moved to South Florida, where that was a whole nother world. I didn't know any Hispanic or Latin people. I don't think I'd ever thought about or heard Spanish being spoken. And talk about multicultural, talk about diverse. I ended up at a junior high school in high school with, you know, black and brown kids, white kids. And it was just great. It just exposed me to a less, like, my parents are conservative and Christian, but they're not so staunch, right? But moving to South Florida was just, man, let me tell you, Dane, I got there and I had my little accent and that's how I would talk to folks. And
I don't hear it now.
Oh no, are you kidding? This is a sophisticated Dee Dee Brown that lost her accent. But part of the reason I did was because I showed up at that bus stop in Homestead, Florida, and people started commenting on it. And I never knew I had an accent because everyone around me always had one. And so, I mean, it's one of the ways you learn very early to code switch, right? And that is could be a whole different podcast, but it was just such a wonderful opportunity to be there. There's something about, you know, it's stressful at the time, but you're being uprooted and you're having to adjust and figure out, you know, your way in and be creative and all those things that I think have served me in my life, that I'm very adaptable, I'm very flexible. And I think I was learning a lot of those lessons early on. I'm also, you know, my biological parents are divorced. I'm the oldest of five. We had a very blended family. My stepfather had a daughter the same age as mine. Like, all of those things, I think, informs a lot of unwittingly, like, not just necessarily your career choices, but how you operate in life. You don't realize the skill set that you're getting from having to navigate, you know, two sets of parents and two sets of siblings and all of those things. So.
Exactly. Yeah. I think a lot of times we don't realize how we're being shaped for what we could be successful in later on by just the way that we grew up, our environment, our friends, even. And you mentioned the culture shock that you had going to Florida, but I want to hear about your culture shock going to Atlanta. I think that had to be a big difference. Maybe not so much from Alabama, but even from Atlanta to New York. What was it? What was your experience like moving to a big city like New York, which is probably the biggest city I'd lived in up to that point?
It was, you know, I've been so blessed that, like, wherever I've gone, I've met, like, really great people. And I'm a sponge. So I meet people and I'm watching and figuring out, like, oh, that's kind of how you conduct yourself or dress yourself in a work environment or when you go to a party or like those sort of, like, so while I wasn't super sheltered, there was some sheltering growing on, just lack of exposure on things. So I mean, I'm moving to Atlanta and luckily I had family there and they let my best friend and I, who I went to high school and college with, come and stay with them in Atlanta for a bit. And the culture shock, maybe, I also waited tables in college, and that's another way that you learn sort of how to study people and be adaptable and flexible and also just be of service. You really know that how you're presenting yourself affects your money. It affects your tips, right? And I also, again, waited tables when I moved to Atlanta. So, you know, I think having the very humble roots that I had, you know, we had to do our chores. My parents did not suffer any fools. Again, they weren't super strict, but they meant business about chores and being respectful and all those things. But also giving us all the space to kind of figure ourselves out, like figure out how to solve our own problems. Within like conflict that you may have with your siblings, that sort of stuff. They weren't helicopter parents. There was no coddling in my, and again, that served me, it served me well. But moving to Atlanta from Montgomery, I mean, Atlanta was Chocolate City then. I mean, there was, I'm really dating myself now. Freak Neek was a thing. Like it was, it was really, and I'm a young adult and I'm having to figure out money, which is not something we ever really discuss, like how you manage your money and why you don't do this, why you don't drink all your tips away partying at night, you know, that kind of stuff. And then I just met some really great people who I also partied with, but they were also super professional, like very driven, like all those things. And again, I'm just like looking, how do I be more like that? Right? What's this level of sophistication that I'd like to present myself with and bring? And again, don't get me wrong. My mother's a very sophisticated, glamorous woman, always dressed up, always dressed to the nine, full face of makeup to go to the, you know, the mailbox. But it's, you know, she's always clean, you know, church was a thing. You always presented your best self. But she was a nurse, so she always wore a uniform to work. So professionally, I'm like, how am I presenting myself, like, overall? Like, what are people seeing when they walk through the door? What are they hearing? You know, no more Southern accent. So that culture shock was again, just me adapting, being flexible. What do I need to do here? What do I need to give here? What do I need to get? And I was just making new friends along the way, you know, making new friends, new relationships, you know, what's happy hour? What is this networking thing people are talking about? Like figuring all of that out was just, I was just lit up. I was lit up by Atlanta. And when I decided to leave, I guess I was around 30, 31. I was like, kind of feeling like I had outgrown Atlanta because a lot of my friends were getting married. That's not what, I wasn't even really seriously dating or thinking about it at that time. And the job that I had at In Demand, the headquarters were in New York. So I was always there for work. And I was like, I love this city, the energy, the vitality. And I think Sex and the City was sort of coming out at that time. And, you know, who didn't want to be Carrie, you know, running around in heels. I didn't last long. And so leaving and moving to New York, just the best possible culture shock. Just the best possible culture shock. Oh man, it was great. Lit me up. I was so happy.
Would you recommend that people from small towns move to New York? I mean, yes. New York is a huge jump, but I think it's so important to be exposed to things that you normally wouldn't be. But also just the things that you learn just by seeing people that you wouldn't normally see also, like the way you were talking about studying people and even waiting tables. I had never thought about how much you can learn from waiting tables, because when you think about that job, you just think about you only make $2 an hour and you have to work for tips and you're on your feet all day and you have to deal with people. And it's all these negatives that you talk about, but there are a lot of positives to be gained through that.
You're so correct. I presume you've waited tables?
I have, if you want to hear a quick story, I applied to Red Robin. I don't know if you know that restaurant. It's a burger restaurant.
Yeah, of course.
I applied there one summer. It was my backup option, so it wasn't my first choice. So I was already going in thinking, I don't really want to do this. The first day of training, I'm watching and kind of shadowing this woman who's waiting tables. And I could tell she's a little bit nervous because she's never had somebody like on her back the whole entire time. She took this huge tray of drinks off of a table and like turned to go walk the other way and hit me. They all fell on me, all fell on her. It was super embarrassing for her. I felt horrible, and I never went back because Urban Outfitters called. But I can say that I did for a day. But I definitely did not have the experience anyone else had.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. How many drinks have I dropped on people and their laps, knocked things over, broken things? I have to say the two things that I have told people along, you know, over the years, is that I wish everyone could wait tables and or work in retail.
Yeah, retail is important. Super important.
Retail's so important. And I only worked like one really retail job. I wouldn't get hired. Like I wanted to work at Express or the Limited when I was in, but they would never hire me. So I was like in hospitality. So serving or working in retail and moving to New York. And what serving and working in retail do for you is the level of thoughtfulness, customer service, thinking on your feet that you have to have really does train your brain in a way. And certainly for PR marketing events, like what, you know, our world, trains your brain in a way to handle information, thinking on your feet, thinking through to the next step, planning ahead in a way that I'm not sure, in a way that I'm sure maybe other jobs don't, right?
Right.
Where there's not so much action and chaos and things going around. And honestly, I waited tables at Houston's in Atlanta for, I guess, a year or so. And man, let me tell you, again, I'm 23, 24 at this time. So I'm a grown up, but let me tell you what that taught me. Their level of hospitality and customer service and excellence, like you had to show up with your shirt perfectly pressed, seam or crease on, it had to be a certain kind of pinpoint shirt. And it had to be perfectly creased. You had to have your apron perfectly ironed and creased. The spec tie, you had to carry a certain kind of pin. And if you didn't carry, and by the way, those pins were a dollar each. And if your customers took them, you could take a dollar off the tip that you got. So that, and even just seeing how they laid out the food, the training, there's a reason Houston's is what it is. And people can say, oh, it's a chain or whatever, but mostly any experience you've ever had there, there's a quality control for the food, presentation, staff, they're expertly trained. And that taught me so much about presentation. It taught me so much about how things, you know, when you get in front of someone, what are you saying? How are you communicating that? Is this up to par? Thinking ahead for your shift. Again, I met some really great people doing that, but that level of excellence has stayed with me completely.
Totally. So, I mean, even, you know, going to work at Planet Hollywood, you're in front of a lot of high profile people, people with a lot of money. And clearly that led to you getting into your career now. What were some, I want to hear some fun stories about Planet Hollywood. Let's get into fun story time.
I mean, I wish I had thought to bring some photos for you to see, but, you know, this is the thing. Like, my job was to put my head down and get the work. Like, that was PR then. PR is a little bit different now, right? So every major publicist that you know, especially in entertainment, they're like, kind of like celebrities. They have more followers than a lot of people. But like, one of the things that my boss and now very good friend, and who also has mentored me and taught me everything that she knew, Carolyn Sloss, was like, you don't take photos with celebrities. You are there to do a job. Your job is to make them look good. And that you are there to set that up, make them shine, do your thing. And I gotta tell you, there were some, and I was in front of some amazing celebrities. I'm talking about, like, we did memorabilia presentations with Shamar Moore. Ooh. I gotta tell you how hard that was, because at the time, Shamar is just on the scene. He's the pretty boy. He's like he's everybody. So he was donating, no, we were giving him a leather jacket. I think at a Planet Hollywood jacket. And oh my God. And I had the biggest crush on him. So you got to imagine, I'm trying to get this man, like, there's photographers everywhere, all the news, like, you know, again, the cameras, which, like, the local local TV stations would show up, the newspapers, like, and you wanted, and there were, we did this with, like, live crowds, like, people dining there could be a part of it, but also they showed up outside. So we had security everywhere. It was insane. I'm like, I can't even look at this man. And he, of course, does his baby girl shtick and the whole, like, it's really amazing that I probably didn't get fired that day, because I was like, this man's so hot, it is hard for me to focus. And we had Cuba Gooding Jr. come, like, right after the success, I think, of, was it Jerry Maguire? It must have been, because he was, like, jumping on cars and the streets were shut down. Oh. It was mayhem.
Just to
say nothing of when the owners came. So for the 96 Olympics in Atlanta, we had the women's gymnastics team that had just won a gold medal, and oh, the gymnast Carrie Struggs had just landed that amazing, I think it was the balance beam, I think she's the one that solidified that they won the gold, and she, like, twisted her ankle. We had this big after party afterwards, and remember her being, like, carried in with her, like, sprained or broken ankle or whatever was going on. But it was like stuff like that, that at the time I'm having an out of body experience. And I have one funny story to tell you. And I don't know, I think this is why this sticks with me, is because Bruce Jenner, I think it was the 20th anniversary of when he won the decathlon. So we hosted the I guess that was during the Olympics, and that's why maybe they were in town, but he was married to Kris Jenner at the time. And guess who else came, but they were little kids.
Oh wow.
All those little, the Kim Kardashian, the other two Kardashians,
Kourtney
were there,
and Khloe.
Yes, we had this big memorabilia presentation. Kris Jenner was there, and she did not suffer any fools. Let me tell you, she was so specific and knew what she wanted and, like, organized that thing and literally, I think, drove all of us sort of crazy, but in the way that she was a very detail-oriented woman. We were doing this. She had a vision for it. Like, no surprise knowing what we know about her. Mm-hmm. And the funnier thing ever is we had to order, and I don't know why I remember this, but we had to order these, like, votive candles that we put on all the tables. Huh. And you know those votive candles just, like, burn down? Do you know that...
Chris
wanted all the used votive candles back. We had to get them off, box them up, and send them to her.
That's such a weird request, but...
It's so weird! But I guess the point is that they might have been providing that in some way or contributing some funds to it, and she wanted to get her money's worth. And it was just, again, that lesson in going back of being, like, excellent and knowing what you want, and also just providing really great customer service. But it's so funny to look back on that now, knowing, of course, who they all are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knew? Yeah.
Well, Didi, I want to hear if you have anything that you would say, because you've only been at Paramount for a year, but anyone mm-hmm. that could be looking to get in a career at Paramount or even just in publicity, film publicity, since you've been doing that for such a long time, what are some advice or pieces of advice that you would have for them? I know we talked about a lot, but, you know, aside from just the presentation of it all and being absorbent and being a sponge, what are some key things that people could try to work on or even think about when they're trying to pursue a career in publicity?
I would say start where you are. More and more, I'm noticing, because we're interviewing for a few open positions on our team, mm-hmm. And I'm seeing a lot of these students who also, like, knew that somehow they stumbled into public relations, so they knew it was, like, a thing, or they learned it was a thing, and it really lit their fire. But they're starting where they are. They're doing things like volunteering or to work on, you know, the newspaper. They're at, you know, the Public Relations Society of America. They're already doing a lot of this stuff before they get to the place where they're graduating and looking for a job. But by the way, if you don't do that, that doesn't mean you can't get your foot in the door. There was a woman I met recently. She started in finance, and she realized finance wasn't for her, but she realized she was lit up somehow by PR and connecting with people. And so she quit her job, and she's embarking on this world in publicity. And she's a bit older, so I have a lot of love for somebody starting their career a little bit older, mm-hmm. and sort of figuring out as you go along. So that process of discovery is really important, but also now everything is so Googleable. You have access to so much. Start where you are. If you are interested in PR and you can't get an internship at a major agency, or you can't get an internship at a studio, or what about offering to do PR for your church? What about offering to do PR for parents' business? You know, if they're entrepreneurs, what about offering to do PR for your friend, aspiring rapper? You want to get in the music industry, but you can't quite get into Universal Music or whatever. Start where you are. Just be really creative, and also just be nimble. That's one of the things that, again, I sort of attribute being able to have the longevity and these wonderful opportunities that I've, you know, been given, and really work hard. I try to always remember, again, just from this very humble place of being of service. In general, we're in service of each other, right? Mm-hmm. I'm here to love on you as my mother, support you in some way. Even though we're just meeting, I'm like, I'm in service of you. I'm in service of spreading this information that I have, that I want to help people who have a love and passion for communications, but particularly Black and Brown folks. That may not know that this is an option, but I'm in service of that. And I'm in service of young people who want a few minutes of my time so I'm here to help and connect. And I'm in service of the job and the filmmakers and the talent that I work with. I'm in service of the story we're trying to tell. And if you can really embrace it from that perspective, I think that you realize that you're part of this really amazing opportunity and narrative, and be open to just working really, really hard, creatively. And don't be afraid to make mistakes and speak up and offer suggestions. The one other thing that I would just say that I think is so important for us, and aside from sort of making your own opportunities, and it's great that you know, to connect with someone who looks like you, that's not often the case, but that should never stand in the way of you getting the information, getting the support, getting the mentorship. I certainly have never had a Black female boss until I was, on that first project that I did, the Get On Up project that I did. Where I was, and that was the first time I ever worked with a group of Black people, really. But before that, every boss and mentor that I had in the space, they were always white, female or male, right? And guess what? I still got the nurturing, mentorship, everything that helped get me to the next. Because I was, again, I worked really hard. I was a sponge. I asked questions. I wanted to know, how can I make your job easier? Mm-hmm. How can I make you look good? How can I set you up for success? And I hope that never gets lost on folks just starting their career, because you're going to continue to do that. And that's what I have to do now. I want my boss to look good, so I'm going to give him all the information I need to give him so he is prepared and he knows what's happening. Guess what else? Conversely, he sets me up to shine. You know, I'm called on to speak in meetings to present information because he wants everyone to see, yeah, we're on this team together. Look at what the person who works for me does. Da, 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 da. And yeah, it's a very collaborative effort. Yeah. Did that make sense? I know it was a sort of a long-winded.
No, I think start where you are is some of the best advice anyone can get, because we so often we see where we want to be and we're just like, the distance between here and there is so far. I don't even know where to start. But start where you are. Where you are is where you need to start. And I think that's the best best piece of advice that anyone can get. Really quickly, I want to hear about what you're excited to work on next as SVP of Multicultural Marketing at Paramount.
Wow, Dane. I'm so excited to be back in the space, working with some of the outlets and key folks in the, you know, African-American and Hispanic and now, you know, AAPI communities. I'm so excited to be, you know, expanding and telling, you know, stories and because again, we're not a monolith. We consume a lot of information. How do we tell these stories and make them relevant to diverse audiences? But I'm super psyched to be working with the team of folks on the multicultural side that I'm working with, trying to figure out new and exciting ways to authentically connect to our audiences. And I'm also excited to be working with some folks I haven't been working closely with over the past year when I was in national publicity. And that is like the Corey Murrays of the world over at Essence. I miss working, you know, with her. I miss working with Danielle Young, who is doing such amazing, great content on Instagram and on her show at Facebook Quartz. So I'm excited to be working again with this wonderful that we have in the entertainment publicity. Also, just again, finding new and creative ways to authentically connect with, you know, diverse audiences.
Great. Well, Didi, look, this was amazing. I'm so happy that I got to talk to you. I'm so happy to meet you. Good luck on your move to LA. I know that that's a big, big transition. I'm not sure if you've ever lived there, but I'm sure you've had trips, but I don't think it compares to New York. I'm sorry. I'm New York biased.
Listen, I'm kind of with you there. I'm, you know, have to be nimble and I'm along for the ride, and you know, everything I think happens for a reason. I've been in New York almost 20 years, Bed-Stuy for the past 12-13, so I'm ride or die. So yeah, thank you so much. Thank you, Dane. This really lit me up, and anything I can do to help along, you know, with the initiative that you and Kyle have embarked on, I'm happy to do it. I want to shout it from the rooftops. There's a space for Black and brown folks in communications in general, and certainly in entertainment. And there's so many jobs available that aren't just about, you know, on the creative side, there's marketing, there's analytics. The SVP of analytics at Paramount is a Black man. And analytics plays so much into how and why we do certain things and how and why we market in certain places. You know, there's just so much opportunity for us in this space. And it's not all just, again, in front of the camera, but there's so many opportunities behind the camera. And I just love talking about it and hopefully inspiring some of us to get into the space.
Totally. Well, I'm inspired. And once again, thank you, Dee Dee. It was great talking to you. And I think we should talk again soon. I think we have more story to tell.
We sure do. I got some more Planet Hollywood stories.
Oh, yeah. And bring pictures next time. Definitely. Oh, God. All right. Thank you, Dee Dee.